head provided feeble illumination.
"Which way?" said Decker.
Roby looked in both directions, took a sniff of the air, examined the dirt on either side of the doorway, and said,
"Footprints and airflow only come from that way," he said, pointing to their right.
He took the spikes out of his belt and held two in each hand. They poked out between his fingers like an animal's claws.
"If anyone's here, that explosion will have alerted them," said Decker.
"I'm actually counting on that," said Roby.
100 feet later, Roby grabbed Decker and thrust him into the shadows right next to the wall. Roby reached up and pulled the wires from the light directly above them. This part of the passageway became far darker. Someone was coming fast. A few moments later, a trio of men burst into view. All three were armed. They ran in a column formation. Right as they passed, Roby struck with the spikes. He stabbed one man in the neck, spun around, and sunk two spikes into the second man's gut, thrusting the spikes upward to his diaphragm. Both men went down, and neither would get back up. The other man turned and pointed his subgun at Roby. He never fired because Decker fell on top of him. His nearly 300 pounds pinned the man flat to the ground, and his subgun tumbled from his hands. Roby picked up the weapon and looked at the other two men. One was dead, the other was gurgling his last few breaths. Roby waited until he expired and said to Decker,
"Let him up."
Decker slowly rose off the man. Roby said,
"Who are you?"
The man sat on his haunches and shook his head. He was around 40, and his dark, curly hair was shot through with gray.
"Where are we?" said Roby.
Another shake of the head.
"Why did you kidnap us?"
This time the man didn't even bother to shake his head. He just sat there and stared at Roby for a moment before lifting his hand to his mouth. Roby leapt forward, but the man had already swallowed something. He started convulsing, then foam seeped out of his mouth and he fell sideways. He took a few tortured breaths, and then his body relaxed. Decker bent over him and checked his pulse. There was none.
"That was a fast poison," he said.
"Sort of the point," replied Roby.
Decker picked up one of the subguns, and they kept going in the same direction. There was a doorway up ahead. Roby fingered the subgun and looked at Decker.
"Count of three. You go left, I go right."
Decker nodded.
"One, two, three."
They burst into the room, Roby's gun covering the right half of the space and Decker's the left. Dead center of the room stood Ben Purdy. He wasn't alone. He was holding a gun to the other person's head, and that person was Alex Jameson.
Chapter 79.
"You guys are really something," said Purdy, shaking his head. "I seem to have run out of men to take you on."
"If you let her go, we all walk away from this," said Decker.
"That won't be happening," said Purdy, matter-of-factly. "You destroyed everything I've been working on."
"You want to talk about it?" said Decker.
"No, I want to kill all three of you. But first, put down your weapons, or she gets an unwanted hole in the head. Do it now," he added in a calm, measured voice. "I don't have anything left to lose."
Roby and Decker laid their weapons down and stepped away from them.
"I'm surprised you came back here," said Decker.
"Well, considering the people who were going to pay me shitloads of money are now not going to stop looking for me until I'm good and dead, I figured they might have thought the same thing. I convinced my remaining team members of that philosophy, but you've taken care of them, so I'm the last man standing."
He pushed the gun against Jameson's head.
"And I had to stay and repay you for all you've done to ruin my life. In fact, that's my only focus in life right now."
"I take it you followed us to Hal Parker's," said Decker.
"We've definitely been keeping eyes on you. My men heard you inside arriving at the truth behind what I did. I'm surprised you didn't figure it out sooner. And after that, well, I thought it best to bring you here. In fact, if I show photos of you three dead, my employers might just cut me some slack. It's worth a shot, anyway."
"How'd you get all those guys into the country?" asked Roby.
"How else? right over the little old Canadian border. It was easy.
He eyed Decker.
They found the bunker, didn't they?
Decker nodded.
Was the stuff as potent as Daniels told me it was?
Apparently so. You do realize that stuff would have killed millions of people.
Purdy shook his head dismissively.
No, Daniels told me it would remain localized. It was heavy enough to where it couldn't remain airborne in a concentrated pattern to be distributed by wind currents over large distances. It would max out at about 100 miles in all directions.
Still really bad.
Bullshit. You want to know something?
What?
That's why the Air Force put the kibosh on the program, Daniels told me, because it couldn't kill enough people. There's your goody good U.S. of A. The shit they do, you wouldn't believe. And you think I'm a bad guy?
I don't think. I know you are, replied Decker.
Yeah, well, distributing the stuff here was certainly enough to put the stop on the fracking industry.
And that's what you were really being paid for, said Decker.
An amount of money that was truly beyond belief.
Even if it stayed local, it would have killed a lot of people, Decker pointed out.
Every plan has collateral damage. The Pentagon builds that into every scenario. What's the civilian death count gonna be? How many kiddies will bite the bullet? Price of doing the business of war. There's nothing innocent about that. We're just like everybody else.
No, we're not. And I didn't realize you were at war with your own country, commented Roby.
Purdy eyed him.
I was just a grunt, all I ever would be. But I had brains and ambition, which led me to this point. The risks I took. All the work. For nothing.
In his anger, he tightened his grip on Jameson, causing her to cry out in pain.
Taking time bomb, said Decker. You mentioned that to a guy in the bar. That's how we got on to you. Only back then, we thought you were a good guy.
Purdy grimaced.
I had just found out all the stuff and hadn't decided what to do about it yet, and I was drunk at the time. Finding out that you're sitting on a possible Armageddon will cause you to drink. I regretted it the moment I said it, but I didn't even remember who I said it to.
Decker said,
with your smarts, you could have gone to Silicon Valley and made a lot more than Uncle Sam was paying you. They couldn't pay me what these guys were, not if I busted my ass for 1,000,000 years.
I could have made the Forbes list. I'm not kidding.
And who was paying you? Asked Roby.
People that even if you knew who they were, you couldn't touch.
Why's that?
Purdy grinned.
Because they're valuable and trusted allies of ours. That's why. We'd never expose them for what they really are. Don't you read the newspapers? We're suckers. We know they're bad, but we do nothing. And you want to know why?
Oil.
It makes me sick.
So did the collateral damage calculation include your mother? Queried Decker.
Purdy's expression turned grim.
That was your fault, not mine. You went there to question her. My partners got nervous and they took care of that end. I wasn't happy about it, but I had no choice. Just so you know, I was going to buy her a nice place, take care of her. But what did she have really to live for? You saw her place. It was Shitsville in the middle of nowhere. Wherever she is, I think she's better off.
Both Jameson and Decker flinched at this cruel comment. Roby said,
and who gave you the right to make that decision for her?
I gave myself the right, Purdy snapped.
Can you answer a question? Said Decker.
What?
Did you kill Irene Kramer, Hal Parker, and Pamela Ames?
Purdy looked genuinely confused.
I know Hal. I hunted with him. I didn't know he was dead.
Well, we're not sure he is, but he is missing. And the others?
I've never heard of... What were their names again?
Irene Kramer and Pamela Ames.
He shook his head.
I had nothing to do with whatever happened to them.
Okay, so where does that leave us? Said Decker.
With the three of you dead and me not. I couldn't believe you dropped your weapons. That was a mistake.
Decker glanced at Jameson, but she wasn't looking at Decker. She seemed to be looking past him,
when she suddenly slumped downward as though unconscious, causing Purdy to reach forward and grab at her. The next moment, Decker felt something fly past his ear. The spike embedded several inches deep in Purdy's eye socket. He screamed from the impact and shock, dropped his gun, and staggered back. Then he went into convulsions and fell to the floor, where he continued to gyrate and pull at the spike for a few more seconds before his clutching hands fell away and he grew still. Roby came to stand over him as Decker helped Jameson up. Then Roby reached down, pulled the spike free, and threw it on the floor. "What a prick," he said quietly. He looked back at Decker and Jameson. "Nice pickup on my signal, Jameson."
"Nice throwing with that spike,"
she replied breathlessly. "You guys ready to get out of here?"
"That would be a hell yes," said Decker.
It was still dark outside, though in the horizon could be seen the first few streaks of dawn. The building they had been in appeared indeed to be an abandoned storage facility of some kind, with rusted equipment parked behind a leaning 10-foot-high chain-link fence. They had found their guns and phones, along with the keys to the SUV parked out here. Roby drove them back to town in the SUV.
"I'll get some people out to where they took us to scrub it of the bodies," said Roby.
"So Purdy did all this for the cash,"
said Jameson.
"And sacrificed his own mother in the process? What a piece of work."
"How'd they snatch you?" asked Decker.
"I went out to get in the SUV, and the next thing I know, I woke up on the floor."
She glanced at Roby.
"What Purdy said about the people behind this suffering the consequences, it mirrored what your boss said."
"Yeah," said Roby.
"Is that really how it's going to go down?"
she asked.
"Probably."
"And that doesn't piss you off?"
"Every molecule in my body."
"And you're just going to let it happen?"
Roby eyed her in the mirror.
"I didn't say that, did I? But that's for another day. And you can't tell anyone about finding Purdy and what happened back there. That will do this country no good and might unleash some nightmare scenarios that are far better avoided."
Decker and Jameson exchanged glances. He said,
"That's a tough favor to ask, Roby. And I wouldn't be asking unless it were really important, because it is."
Finally, Decker and Jameson nodded in agreement.
"Well, at least this nightmare is over, right, Decker?"
said Jameson.
"It's not over yet," he replied.
"What? Why not?"
"Because Irene Kramer, Pamela Ames, Hal Parker, Stuart McClellan, and Maddie and Hugh Dawson deserve justice. And it hasn't happened yet. And I'm not leaving North Dakota until they get it."
Chapter 80. The next day after breakfast, Decker got a cup of coffee from the hotel restaurant and carried it up to his room, sat on his bed, sipped on the drink, and thought about, well, everything. But that only seemed to make the muddle worse. He finally took out his wallet and slipped out the photo of his wife and daughter. He gazed at Molly's young face, her crinkled smile, her plump cheeks, and he saw a bit of himself and a lot of her mother in there. He closed his eyes and just imagined being with them again, holding hands, giving kisses and hugs, simply going for a walk, helping Molly to learn how to ride a bike, gripping Cassie's hand and giving encouragement as their daughter was born. He opened his eyes after this cleansing moment. As his wife and daughter receded into his memories, they both seemed to be speaking to him, telling him something.
"You can do this."
Whether it was his imagination or something else, Decker really didn't care.
"You're a detective. Start acting like it."
He settled back and refocused. Something that had been burning in Decker's gut for a long time now, and he'd really done nothing about it. He had, instead, just followed blithely along a traditional investigative path.
"Okay, let's go blank slate. Square one. First rule, you don't trust anybody. Second related rule, you suspect everybody until something comes along to definitively remove that suspicion."
He truly believed that the key to this whole thing had not started a week ago, or a month ago, or even a year ago. The bunker piece might have dated from then, because up until that point, Ben Purdy could not have known that some of the deadliest substances on Earth were buried in the North Dakota soil. But something really important to the current case had started even before that. As he focused on certain possibilities, Decker's memory file popped down from his cloud and settled front and center in his thoughts. In this memory, he saw the woman walk to the stairs and head up. Decker grabbed his jacket and headed out. Finally, finally, he might be getting somewhere. The OK Corral saloon was not yet open when Decker burst in. Employees were unstacking chairs from the tops of tables and wiping down the walnut bar, counting glasses, sorting inventory, and unloading dishwashers.
"We don't open till noon," one of them said to Decker. "The door should have been locked."
Decker strode forward, held up his FBI credentials, and said, "I need to go up there." He pointed to the staircase that led to the second floor.
"You can't,"
said the man, who was in his 20s, scrawny, with pimply cheeks and a ragged goatee.
"Why not?" "Because we're closed, like I just told you."
Decker stuck his creds right in the guy's face.
"This says otherwise."
The man looked around at the others who had stopped what they were doing and were staring at this face-off.
"Why?"
"Caroline Dawson keeps a room up there."
"So?"
"So I need to see it. Now."
"I have to call somebody."
"The only person I'll be calling will be the police if you don't let me up there."
The guy's Adam's apple was bobbing up and down, and he looked desperately around for some support from his fellow workers. To a person, they all turned away from him and commenced performing their tasks again.
"Okay," said the guy, "but you need a key."
"Where is it?"
He grinned triumphantly.
"Miss Dawson keeps it."
"No problem," said Decker as he headed up the stairs.
"Hey!"
Decker doubled his speed. He reached a closed door that was apparently the sole entrance to the space up here. It had been open the previous time. He tried the knob, but now it was locked. He took out a small leather kit. Inside were two pick tools. He only needed one to do the job, since the lock was not a deadbolt. He pushed the door open and went through. He quickly moved through the event space and bar area, turned left, and came face to face with the only other door here. This lock took both his pick tools, and when that didn't work, his shoulder did the trick. When the lock burst and the heavy door swung inward, Decker found himself looking at the nicely appointed bedroom that he had been in once before while meeting with Caroline Dawson. Four-poster bed, an enormous armoire, a couple of nightstands, and an attached bathroom. He hadn't seen that on his previous visit. He poked his head in and saw a toilet, a bidet, a double granite-topped vanity, and a marble walk-in shower with a rainfall showerhead. Decker slowly took it all in, until his gaze fell upon the armoire. He walked over and opened the door. It was full of women's clothing, some costume jewelry, and many pairs of shoes. He searched through it all, but found nothing particularly useful. He closed the door and took out his tack light. He shone it under all the furniture before coming to the bed. That was where he struck gold, in the crevice between the bed frame and the box springs. No one would notice unless they'd been looking closely. His fingers gripped the tiny object and examined it closely. He had seen it before, right in the bar downstairs. He pocketed it and went back down. The same man confronted him at the bottom.
"I've called the cops," he blurted out.
"Give them my best," said Decker as he walked past him and out the door.
Chapter 81. Decker's long legs carried him swiftly to the funeral home. On the way, he had called Jameson and told her to join him after filling her in on his discovery. The funeral home parking lot held two long black hearses and a limo for transporting the family to the cemetery. There was also a late-model Mustang convertible, with its top up, parked near the side door. The license plate read, HEAVN. Jameson joined him at the front door.
"What are you going to do?"
"Cut through the crap," he replied.
They entered the front doors and were confronted by the same young man they had previously dealt with here.
"Oh, it's you again."
"Where is Mrs. Southern?"
"She's currently occupied."
Not good enough,
said Jameson, holding out her badge.
Be more specific.
She's working on a client.
Where? Said Decker.
You can't go back there.
Watch me.
He strode off with Jameson in tow. The young man cried out, I'm calling the cops!
Good, said Decker.
They heard noises and followed them to their source. It was a door to a room on a hallway they had not been down before. Decker gripped the knob and glanced at Jameson, who nodded. He pushed the door open and they strode in. Liz Southern looked up from what she was doing, which apparently was preparing her husband's body for his funeral. He lay naked on a table before her. On a rolling cart lay all the tools and cosmetics she was employing to do her task.
What the hell are you doing here?
She snapped, jumping up.
How did you get back here?
We need to talk to you, said Decker.
I'm going to have both of you.
She stopped when Decker held it up, the item he'd found under the bed.
You've probably been looking for this, he said.
She froze, her hand halfway to the phone sitting on a counter. She turned, seemingly mesmerized by what he was holding, and held her hand out for it. She had almost reached it when Decker pulled it back.
Jade earring. You were wearing a pair when I first met you at the bar. Buddhist temples. Very nice.
Where did you find it?
She asked quietly, slumping down on the stool she had been perched on when they had come in. Decker glanced at Walt Southern's body.
I'm not shy about these things, but still, can you cover him up?
Southern hastily draped a sheet over her husband's remains.
Surprised you're the one doing that, he commented.
Someone had to do it,
she explained, her gaze downcast.
I want him to look presentable. It must be very hard,
said Jameson sympathetically.
Right now, everything is hard,
Southern shot back. She glanced at Decker.
And apparently it's about to get even harder.
To answer your question, I found it under the bed in the room Caroline Dawson keeps at the OK Corral Saloon. The same one I saw you heading up to that night. And I have it on good authority that Caroline Dawson spent that night there as well. She said she went up there with a headache, but that apparently wasn't true. You could obviously confirm that for us.
I don't feel the need or desire to confirm anything.
You and Caroline are a couple, said Decker.
I really don't know what you're getting at,
said Southern dully.
You told us your husband was being blackmailed because he was seeing another woman. If the truth had come out, it would have ruined him. Well, we checked on that story, and we could find no evidence of any such affair.
Southern looked uncertain.
That's not possible. I know that he was having an affair.
And I'm telling you he wasn't, which means you lied.
Southern looked stricken at Decker's words. She took a moment to compose herself.
Okay, you're right. He wasn't having an affair. I did lie about that.
Then how exactly was he being blackmailed? And we need the truth this time, Liz.
She let out a long, resigned sigh.
He was stealing.
Stealing what?
Asked Jameson.
Personal effects that people were supposed to be buried with. Watches, rings, other jewelry. He'd put them on the bodies for the viewing and the funeral service, but right before the casket was sealed, he'd take them off. Who would know, right? It wasn't like they were going to dig the person up or check. And if they were cremated, there was no way to ever check. Then he would take trips out of town or even the state to sell them. He made quite a lot of money doing that.
Why did he do that?
Asked Jameson. Southern looked at Decker.
Remember when we first met? I told you that during bad times, when people couldn't pay us for our services, they'd try to barter.
Yes.
Well, Walt got desperate. I think he convinced himself that he was simply just getting paid for services rendered by the very people he was providing the service to.
That doesn't make it legal or right,
Jameson pointed out.
Desperate people do desperate things,
retorted Southern.
And you knew? Asked Decker.
I suspected. Right before he killed himself, we had a big argument.
You see, I knew that one of our clients had been dressed in her diamond engagement ring. It was at least 4 carats. Exquisite. Walt closed up the casket after the service right before the body was loaded into the hearse to be taken to the cemetery. Then I couldn't find one of my tools that I used to touch up the body before the viewing. I remembered that I had used it to work on her. I opened the casket and found it. It had slid down to the side of the body. That's when I noticed that the ring was gone. After the service was over, I confronted him about it. He was furious. He said I was nuts. I thought he might hit me.
So that explains his note,
said Jameson.
That he was sorry and hated himself.
I suppose it does, yes.
And someone else must have found out,
said Jameson.
And blackmailed him.
How did the blackmail start? Asked Decker.
He received an anonymous message just about the time that Irene Kramer's body was found.
He showed it to you?
Yes. He was both angry and scared.
What did it say?
Basically, it threatened exposure unless Walt did what they asked him to do.
Fudge the post results,
said Jameson.
Yes, particularly about the slicing of the stomach and intestines. To tell the truth, I was surprised that he had even mentioned it in his report. But he really did care about doing a good job, I'll give him that.
How did you know they weren't bluffing about knowing about his thefts?
Those business trips he took, they had photos of him pawning the items he'd stolen. Business records, payment receipts.
Any idea who it was?
Southern shook her head.
Why did he tell you about the blackmail?
I guess he needed my support on this to make sure it all went okay. I mean, I was part of the business, too. Our whole life is tied up in this place. If it went under, we'd have nothing. And Walt said if he was caught, he'd say I knew all about it, that I would go to jail, too. I was so scared, so I just went along with everything.
Have the blackmailers been in touch with you since Walt killed himself? Asked Decker.
No. Why would they contact me?
I don't know, but they might. And let us know if they do.
He paused.
So what do you plan to do now?
I don't know. My head is filled with so much stuff now, it's hard to think straight. I have to keep the business going, for one thing.
Can you manage that?
Walt was certified in doing postmortems, which I'm not. But I am a trained and certified mortician. I can do embalming, cosmetics, cremation, everything you need to take care of people properly at the end.
Will you eventually leave here?
Asked Jameson.
I mean, you could build a business somewhere else.
Caroline would have to agree. I don't want to go without her. I really do care for her. And yes, we are a couple.
But she was seeing my brother-in-law. You saw them together at the OK Corral.
Southern smiled grimly.
She was merely keeping up heterosexual appearances.
That must have been hard to keep secret in a town this small.
We worked at it. We were very careful.
Not so careful if you met up in the bedroom above the bar,
Decker pointed out.
We did that very infrequently. Besides, all the people at the bar were drunk and the staff was too busy to notice. And we were friends. Everyone knew that. They just didn't realize what close friends we were. And we'd leave out the back only very late at night. Most of the time, we'd go out to my parents' old farmhouse to be together. I thought about selling the place. Walt wanted me to. My father fought in Vietnam. He brought back a lot of curiosities from there that might be quite valuable. Plus a lot of weapons. He was quite the gun guy. But it made for a private place for Caroline and me. So I'm glad I kept it.
Is that your car in the parking lot? Asked Decker. Heaven?
Yes.
She smiled.
What? Asked Decker.
Remember I talked about barter? Well, the tires on the Mustang came from Hal Parker in payment for us burying his wife.
I guess people do what they have to do.
Will this have to come out? I mean, Caroline and me. Lots of gay people live their lives openly and freely now,
said Jameson.
Yes, but not here, I think.
Look, said Decker, we can't guarantee anything. We're trying to solve a series of crimes. We have to go where the evidence takes us.
I guess I can understand that. Will you be talking to Caroline, too?
Probably.
Can you tell her that I didn't tell you about us? That you figured it out?
If it's important to you,
said Jameson.
It is. Very important.
I can see that, said Decker quietly.
Chapter 82. Decker made a brief stop at the police station to look at an old report. Then he and Jameson drove to the offices of Dawson Enterprises, located in a building in downtown London.
Why are we here?
Jameson asked.
To learn stuff we don't know, replied Decker cryptically.
They were taken to the office of the firm's CFO. His name was Abner Crutchfield, a small, dapper man in his late 50s, with resolute features and a deep voice. He was dressed in an open-collared shirt, slacks, and polished tasseled loafers.
Terrible business with Mr. Dawson and Mr. McClellan, he began. I guess you're working on their cases.
We are, said Decker. We're looking for motives, and we'd like to know about the business deal that they concluded right before their deaths.
All right. I'll certainly tell you what I can, said Crutchfield cautiously.
Decker glanced at Jameson before saying,
I was surprised that Dawson would sell out. He was in the midst of a buying spree, or so I've been told. He even sold his daughter's restaurant out from under her.
Yes, yes, that surprised many of us here.
Was it a large amount that McClellan paid?
I can't get into specific numbers, but it was into the nine figures.
Wow,
said Jameson.
Yes, indeed, commented Crutchfield. Quite a fortune.
When did you first learn that McClellan was going to buy him out?
Asked Jameson.
About 2 months ago. We worked on the deal ever since then in absolute secrecy, and finally closed it. All the docs were signed, sealed, and delivered. Money already wired out and ownership transferred. So McClellan really owns the whole town now.
He paused and looked embarrassed.
I mean, he did.
So now his son will own the town?
Said Jameson.
I'm not privy to that information. I know Mr. McClellan's CFO quite well, though, and he never mentioned that the father had cut the son out, so I assume that Shane will inherit.
He doesn't seem to care that much about business, noted Decker.
I know that's the general rule of thought around here, but can I give you my opinion?
Please do.
I've known Shane since he was a little boy. He adored his mother, and she loved him. But Stuart was totally wrapped up in business. He showed very little affection to either of them.
Go on, prompted Decker.
Shane was very popular in high school, very athletic.
He said he and Joe Kelly made a potent QB-receiver combo.
Crutchfield smiled warmly.
That's right. They were always together, those three, including Caroline, I mean. In fact, Joe was the homecoming king and Caroline was the homecoming queen at junior prom. And then senior year, it was Caroline and Shane as queen and king.
We didn't know that, said Decker.
But then they graduated. Caroline went to college and Shane went off to war. Joe joined the police force. Then Shane came home. His mother had died. He joined the business, reluctantly, I think. His father never gave him any praise, never an ounce of encouragement. Just the opposite, in fact. But, and this is based on what my CFO friend at McClellan's told me, Shane is actually very smart and detail-oriented. I think you would have to be to survive a war. He actually did good work. And now, with his father off his back, I think he will run the company very well. That's my 2 cents, anyway.
And it was a very helpful 2 cents, said Decker. One more question. Did Caroline know that her father was selling out?
Crutchfield's expression changed.
That isn't an easy question to answer.
Just whatever you can tell us.
Over the last year or so, I've sensed some uneasiness between the two of them. Nothing too serious. But Mr. Dawson came to me one day and said he believed that Caroline was growing weary of London. That's when he began reaching out to McClellan's camp.
Did he say why he felt that way?
asked Decker.
No, and I didn't press him on it. That was his own business, not mine. The deal went rather quickly after that.
Maddie's restaurant, said Decker. A tribute to her mother?
Yes, she and her mother were very close. Do you know about Junior Dawson?
Jameson said,
We know he killed himself.
Yes, years ago, after coming out as gay to his parents.
He shook his head sadly.
It was very tragic.
His father didn't care for that alternative lifestyle, I guess,
said Jameson.
Caroline loved her brother, but had a real problem with her father because of the way he treated Junior, especially in public. And Maddie felt the same as Caroline. It drove a wedge between him and his wife, for sure. In fact, if she hadn't died in that tragic accident, I'm not sure they would still be together.
But they were moving to France at the time, said Decker.
Yes, well, all I can say is that wherever they went, I'm not sure they would have stayed together.
Did you ever notice that Stuart McClellan might have been infatuated with Maddie Dawson? Asked Decker.
Stuart? Well, I didn't know him all that well, but my take on that man was that the only person he was infatuated with was himself.
They left Crutchfield's office and headed back to the SUV. Along the way, Decker said quietly, You know, Alex, sometimes the cases that seem the most complex are the most simple.
I would never call this case simple.
Oh, but it is. Very simple. We were the ones making it complicated. But we had help there from some unusual sources.
Meaning?
Meaning we got played big time. Now it's our turn. Chapter 83. Later, Decker and Jameson walked into Joe Kelly's office at the police station. He looked at them.
Where have you two been lately? I've had some thoughts on Ben Purdy and where he might be.
Forget about Purdy, said Decker. We need a search warrant, and we need it now.
For who and what?
Decker told him, and Kelly's eyes widened at the answer.
Can you tell me why? He asked.
I can tell you enough to get the judge to issue a warrant. For the rest, I'd much prefer to show you.
Later that evening, with a warrant in hand, they drove over to a large, well-kept house on the periphery of downtown London and knocked on the door.
The car isn't in the driveway, said Decker.
She may not be home, said Kelly.
Well, the warrant allows us to enter,
said Jameson. Decker picked the front door lock and they went inside. He didn't head for the bedrooms upstairs. Instead, he made a beeline for the laundry room. Hanging there on a peg was a bag marked dry cleaning. He rummaged through it and pulled out the slacks and blouse.
We're very lucky they haven't been cleaned yet.
Later, from a closet shelf, he snagged a pair of pumps off a shelf and checked the size. He nodded to himself. Kelly said,
Now can you tell me what this is about?
As soon as we get these clothes analyzed, you'll know about as much as me.
Late that night, Decker sat in the SUV in downtown London with Jameson in the passenger seat. Jameson was shaking her head in disbelief.
It's still mind-boggling,
she said.
He glanced at her.
You ready to do this?
She touched her Glock.
Ready.
The drive out took about an hour. They stopped well short of the property and made the rest of their way on foot. There was one vehicle parked out front. They recognized it. Decker went over to the car and looked at the tires, then hit the treads with his light.
What are you looking for?
Asked Jameson.
Exactly what I found.
The one-story farmhouse was old and badly in need of repair, but it was isolated, without another house in sight. With Decker leading, they made their way to the barn first. The doors were unlocked. They stepped through and looked around with the aid of Decker's tack light. Flies and mosquitoes were buzzing around, and they had to continually swat them away. They finally spotted a door set against one wall that had an open padlock on it. They stepped through and looked around at the straw floor. Jameson swiped at her face where bugs were swirling.
Yuck, I think I swallowed one.
Decker seemed unbothered by the insects. He knelt down and ran his light over the straw and the floor.
Looks like some blood there. We can get it checked later.
You think this was where Irene Kramer's body was kept?
It would allow bugs in, but no animals, so it's a safe bet. And there would be no one around to hear her scream.
That's certainly true,
said Jameson. They searched another outbuilding that was behind the barn. Inside was a vehicle covered by a tarp. When Decker lifted it, a small Honda was revealed.
It must be Irene Kramer's car,
said Jameson. Before Decker could respond, they heard the car approaching. As they watched from out of sight, the yellow Porsche SUV pulled up to the front of the farmhouse. Caroline Dawson got out and walked up to the door and into the farmhouse.
Okay, that's an unexpected development, said Decker.
So what do we do?
We go and do what we came here to do.
Decker and Jameson crept up to the front door, and Decker whipped it open. Standing in the front room were Caroline and Liz Southern.
What the hell?
Exclaimed Southern.
What are you doing here?
Dawson turned around and looked at them blankly. Decker noted the suitcase on the floor next to Southern.
Going somewhere?
Dawson said,
We're going to Canada for a few days.
Just a few days? Said Decker, looking at Southern.
Yes, Liz thought it would be a good idea to get away.
We know about you and Liz,
said Jameson. Dawson looked taken aback.
What are you talking about? We're just...
Southern interjected.
What we are is none of your business. And what are you doing here?
Decker pointed his gun at them.
We came for the truth, Liz. I think it's time.
Chapter 84. Southern placed herself between Dawson and Decker.
You can't come in here and threaten us. I'm calling the police.
Not to worry. I already called them, was Decker's surprising reply.
A moment later, there was a noise from outside.
And there they are. Keep them covered,
Decker said to Jameson. He went to the door and opened it.
Come on in.
A few moments later, Joe Kelly walked through the doorway. He looked at Decker questioningly.
Why'd you want me to come out here?
But when he saw Southern and Dawson, he said,
I saw the Porsche outside. What is going on?
Decker said,
I thought you'd like to be in on the end of this case.
Kelly looked even more confused.
What do they have to do with any of it?
You mean, what does she have to do with it? Well, for starters, Liz killed Mattie Dawson and Alice Pritchard.
Kelly exclaimed,
What? No, that can't be right. It was an accident.
Southern snapped.
I had no cause to kill Mattie or Alice.
You love Caroline, and you didn't want her to move to France. I don't know how you managed it, but you did.
Dawson cried out.
What the hell are you talking about?
She shot Southern a glance.
Liz, what is he talking about? I wish I knew, Caroline. These allegations are ludicrous.
And Caroline, with your mother gone and your brother already dead, Liz only had your father to worry about. But then Liz had another problem.
What?
Snapped Southern.
Someone found out about your relationship with Caroline.
Your relationship?
Said a shocked-looking Kelly. Dawson shot Kelly a glance.
Yes, Joe, Liz and I have been together.
Kelly gaped but said nothing.
But your father didn't know, said Decker.
It was none of his business. I did want to be open about my sexuality, but Liz thought we should keep it secret.
But you said someone found out. Who?
Asked Kelly.
Irene Kramer, replied Decker.
What are you talking about? How?
Said Kelly, his gaze holding on Dawson.
Liz told me that she and Caroline would sometimes hook up in the apartment above the bar. She and Caroline would leave very late at night, after the bar had closed, and go out the rear entrance. I'm betting that Kramer, who kept late hours as we know, saw them together. And Kramer lived for a while at Dawson Towers, where Caroline has a condo. Kramer probably saw them there, too.
Jameson said,
And that might be the reason Kramer moved. Liz might have threatened her.
Dawson glanced sharply at Southern.
That woman at the condo building who saw us together, That was Irene Kramer. She never told us her name. Maybe it was. So what?
Said Southern. Dawson looked at Decker.
We were sharing a kiss in the doorway of my condo when I guessed this Kramer person came by. She apologized for intruding. It was no big deal.
She looked at Southern again.
I mean, it was no big deal, Liz.
I don't think Kramer had a problem with it. I think the problem was all Liz's.
What do you mean?
Said Dawson. Decker continued.
Kramer had gotten a note that it disturbed her. That's what Alex was referring to. A threat from Liz. She was planning to leave town, but before she could get away, Kramer was abducted. And she was held out in the barn here. But she must have gotten free and found something incriminating and swallowed it.
He turned to Southern.
But you saw her do that because you knew you had to get it back.
He stopped and eyed both her and Dawson's hands where sat the pinky rings he had seen on each of them before. However, he was seeing them for the first time together.
Your rings are identical. You two exchanged them, right?
Dawson rubbed at the ring.
Liz got them both. There are inscriptions inside each.
An inscription inside them that would identify you as being a couple?
Something like that,
said a perplexed Dawson, while Southern remained quiet.
If so, Liz had to get that back. And performing an autopsy on Kramer would have been easy for you, Liz, since your hubby did it for a living. And you no doubt picked up a lot of the techniques and knowledge. You also told us you were a licensed mortician. You can embalm bodies.
Dawson had taken a step away from Southern.
Liz, this is crazy. You couldn't do anything like that.
You really cut her open? Said a disgusted Kelly.
Southern still said nothing. Her cool gaze remained on Decker.
And you're responsible for Walt's death, too, said Decker.
He shot himself,
said Southern quietly.
We all know that.
I believe you were telling the truth about his stealing, but you found out a lot sooner than you told us you had, and you used that against him.
Then why didn't he point the finger at me?
Retorted Southern.
Because he didn't know it was you. All he got were anonymous letters. The threat of losing his business and going to prison was enough to get him to go along with the scheme. I doubt he ever suspected you of being involved in killing Kramer. And his note was entirely sincere. He did feel guilt, and he did hate himself for what he'd done.
This is all speculation.
No, it's not. Now, next up are Hal Parker and Pamela Ames.
Why would Liz do anything to them?
Said Dawson.
Irene Kramer was a tall woman, about 130 pounds or so. She was found in the middle of nowhere. You couldn't carry her all the way there, Liz, so you drove the body there. After you killed her, you kept her in the barn to screw up the time of death, and then you dumped her in a place where you knew a wolf was prowling around. The animal would be attracted to a dead body by the scent. You might have been hoping that the wolf would get to the body and tear it apart, further hiding what you did to get back the object Kramer swallowed. But the body hadn't been there all that long before Parker showed up. The condition of the body told us that. I guess you didn't know he was even in the area. You didn't figure on that complication. And in addition to finding the body, he found something else, didn't he?
Tire tracks,
answered Jameson. Decker nodded.
Ones he knew very well because, as you told us, he gave those tires to you in exchange for your doing his wife's funeral service. The rain would have washed the tracks away, but not before Parker saw them. Did he threaten to expose you?
Southern put her hands in her pockets and said nothing.
And Pamela Ames? Asked Kelly.
She knew Kramer from the colony. It would make sense that she would ask Kramer for help when she left there. Hell, for all I know, Kramer might have encouraged her to leave. So if Kramer mentioned to Ames that she had seen Liz and Caroline in an intimate embrace, and then she turns up dead?
Decker turned to Caroline.
Ames needed money to get out of town. Did she try to get some from you?
No, she never contacted me.
He turned to Southern.
How about you? Or was she going to go to the police with her suspicions? Either way, you had to get rid of her and Parker.
I think the clothes you dressed her in came from your own closet. Your clothes size is the same as the ones found on Ames, and your shoe size, too. I checked.
Liz?
Said Dawson nervously. Decker said, that only left Hugh Dawson.
What did my father have to do with anything, and why would Liz hurt him?
For the money, of course,
answered Jameson.
The money?
Your inheritance, said Decker. He looked at Southern. You wanted Caroline and her fortune, but there was no way you were getting that if Hugh found out about you two. That's why you wanted to keep it secret. You knew what happened to Junior. You needed Hugh gone. So you fed us a bullshit story about Stuart McClellan lusting after Maddie Dawson and your theory that he had killed her, and that her husband suspected and picked now to exact his revenge. The pufferfish toxin was a neat touch. If we check the records, I think it will show that you obtained it somehow. Once he ingested that, it would have been easy for you to drive him out to where he was found and set up the carbon monoxide death trap.
But why kill Stuart? Asked Kelly.
To give a motive for Hugh to kill himself, replied Decker.
But what about his suicide note?
Said Dawson.
People said it was his handwriting.
We had an expert examine it. It was forged by Liz. She'd known Hugh a long time. She's probably seen many examples of his handwriting.
You have no proof, Decker,
said Southern.
Not a shred of it. But I have proof of being slandered by you.
Well, in addition to Kramer's car in your outbuilding, here's some evidence that will knock your socks off.
He pulled an evidence pack from his jacket pocket. Inside was a blouse.
We got a warrant to search your house in town. We found this and your slacks in your dry cleaning bag. This is the blouse you wore to the hospital when you came to check on Caroline the same day her father was killed. You really should have gotten it cleaned right away.
Southern looked nervously at the blouse while Dawson looked on in confusion. Decker said,
Caroline, I explained to you already my theory of how your father was murdered using the extra long twine. Well, I had the FBI medical examiner analyze this blouse today. Do you know what he found?
When she didn't answer, Decker said,
your father's blood. Perfect match.
He paused to let this sink in with the woman before glancing at Southern.
Even if you were a forensics expert, there's never a way to really perfectly predict how blood and DNA spatters are going to fall with a shotgun in play, even if you were kneeling on the other side of the desk. You probably didn't even notice the drops hit you, but the bottom line is, there is no way that trace would have been on your blouse unless you had been in the room when the shotgun was fired, Liz. So there's your proof.
My God, Liz, said Kelly, shaking his head in disbelief.
Caroline looked at the other woman.
My father? Liz, you did that to my father?
Southern's expression turned contemptuous.
A man who would have loathed you if he knew you had been with me. And look what he did to your dear brother. So was it really that big a loss? I can't believe you're even saying that. You killed him?
Southern shook her head, smiled, and said,
But Decker, you're not quite as smart as you think you are.
How's that? He asked.
My neighbor told me about your visit to my house and how you came out carrying some of my clothes.
Decker looked warily at her.
It's why I told you we needed to get away to Canada, Caroline,
said Southern.
I thought Decker might be showing up soon.
She looked at Decker.
Remember when I told you my dad fought in Vietnam and brought back some curiosities?
What about it? Said Decker.
Here's one of them.
Southern withdrew her hand from her pocket. In it was a grenade.
No, Liz, don't!
Screamed Dawson.
Southern pulled the pin and threw it at Decker.
Chapter 85. Decker grabbed Jameson and yanked her from the room and out onto the front porch. The blast blew out the front windows, and the front wall partially collapsed on them, but it had also taken the brunt of the explosion, leaving them bruised but not seriously injured.
They staggered up and looked around.
"Where's Kelly?"
shouted Jameson. They pushed through the debris and went back inside the house to find the front room demolished. They saw Kelly climbing out a broken window at the rear of the room. He was all bloody, and one of his arms was dangling by his side. "Kelly, wait," called out Decker. But the man disappeared from view.
"Where are Liz and Caroline?"
cried out Jameson. Decker ran to the shattered window and looked outside.
"I can't see anything, but their cars are out front. It's the only way out."
They clambered over the debris and ran out of the house. No one was near the vehicles parked in front.
"What the hell?" exclaimed Decker. "Where did they go?"
They heard an engine start up. A few moments later, Kramer's Honda raced from the outbuilding. They ran toward it even as it bore down on them. At the last possible second, Decker went one way and Jameson the other. Then shots were fired. Decker looked up from the ground to see Kelly standing in the middle of the one road leading out, his left arm dangling uselessly next to his torso, and the other curled around his service pistol, which he was emptying into the car's front windshield on the driver's side.
"Kelly, look out!"
screamed Jameson. The car lurched to the right and appeared ready to miss Kelly, but then it straightened out and continued to bear down on him. Kelly launched himself sideways, a second too late, as the edge of the right bumper clipped his leg and sent him flying. He landed hard in a heap 20 feet away and didn't move. The Honda, cracked windshield and all, stopped, backed up, and turned. Now it was heading right toward Decker. He stood and aimed his pistol. Jameson did the same. Before either of them could fire, a heavy round hit the car dead center of the front grille, and it exploded. The Honda was lifted off the ground before slamming back down to the dirt. Before Decker could move, a man came to stand next to him, his long gun in hand. Roby said, "You okay?" Decker nodded. Jessica Reel appeared and helped Jameson up.
"Nothing broken?"
she said.
"I'm good,"
replied Jameson before seeing Kelly writhing in pain on the ground. She hustled over to him and cried out,
"Call 911, hurry."
Decker pulled out his phone, but Reel barked.
"Ambulance is already coming, 1 minute away. We figured it might be needed when you told us to be here tonight as backup."
Decker, Roby, and Reel stared at the Honda. It was no longer mobile, so they weren't worried about it coming at them. But no one had gotten out of the vehicle either. Both Roby's rifle and Reel's pistol were pointed at the car. Decker called out,
"Liz, come out of the car, now!"
Seconds passed, and then the passenger door opened. Southern climbed out with a gun pressed against Dawson's head. When Roby and Reel started to move forward, Decker called out,
"Wait! Just wait!"
The two women moved in front of the Honda.
"Put the gun down now," barked Roby.
Both his and Reel's weapons were pointed directly at Southern's head.
"Don't think so,"
said Southern.
"Now you're going to let us pass. We're getting in Caroline's Porsche, and then we're getting the hell out of this godforsaken place."
"Liz, please,"
said Dawson.
"Let me go."
"It's going to be okay, Caroline. Just trust me. You've always trusted me. I would never do anything to hurt you."
"You're holding a gun to her head," Decker pointed out.
"Well, you sort of forced my hand on that."
Dawson looked over at where Jameson was kneeling next to Kelly.
"I hope Joe is all right. I tried to stop Liz from hitting him."
"You should have known better, Caroline. But that's okay. I'll be strong for both of us. I'll take care of you."
"Put the gun down, Liz," said Decker, watching her every movement, while Roby and Reel did likewise. "You are not leaving here."
"Well, then we have a very big problem, because I have no intention of going to prison."
"Did you really have to kill Kramer?" said Decker.
"I kidnapped her and brought her here. I had the idea that I could get some money from Caroline to make her go away and leave us alone."
"She moved from Dawson Towers and was planning to leave town. I don't think she was doing anything to try to hurt the two of you. I think you're paranoid, and you read way too much into the situation."
You couldn't be more wrong, Decker. My love for Caroline is absolute. But there are others, so many others, who will do anything to keep us apart. Caroline understands that. She knows I had to do what I did.
Dawson flinched at this, but remained silent.
How did Kramer end up dead and butchered then? Asked Decker grimly.
I was taking her some food when she broke free. There was a struggle. My ring came off, and Kramer just swallowed it. I couldn't believe she did that. So I stabbed her and then dumped the body. I never expected the FBI to come here and investigate.
You didn't know about Kramer's past, said Decker.
And then Hal Parker appeared one day and threatened me. You were right about the tires. He had taken photos. He wanted money.
What about Ames?
At the same time, she came around and started asking questions about Kramer. She seemed to know about me and Liz. Ames knew Kramer from the colony. I thought she might have told Ames what she had seen. I got scared. If Hugh found out, he'd cut Caroline out of the money. So it was just about the money, then?
Said Dawson bitterly.
I loved you,
shouted Southern, tears spilling down her cheeks.
Like I have never loved anyone ever. I was looking forward to spending the rest of my life with you. Liz, you were very special to me, so kind and supportive, but killing people and saying you did it for me, you can't do that. It's wrong. You know that.
Southern tightened her grip around Dawson's throat.
I loved you. That's why I did it. It was all for you. You.
Okay. Put the gun down now, Liz, said a nervous Decker as Southern grew more and more out of control.
She shook her head.
That won't be happening, Decker.
Why not?
Caroline and I were meant to be together, and nothing will stop that from happening.
Southern took a deep breath. Her gaze grew rigid and her expression determined. Her finger slipped to the trigger.
We will be together. If not in this life, then the next.
Decker shouted, Don't! The shot rang out. It was like a frozen instant in time. No one moved. No one breathed. The round passed right through Southern's head and out the back. She stood there, dead, for less than a second, and then she toppled to the dirt. Dawson screamed and ran toward them. They all looked around to see the source of the shot. From 100 yards behind them, Shane rose from a prone position on the ground, his rifle and scope in hand.
I was a sniper in the army, he said quietly.
Roby looked at Southern's body.
And a good one, he said.
Chapter 86.
They say you're going to make a pretty full recovery,
said Jameson. She and Decker were looking down at Joe Kelly, who was lying in a hospital bed. He had undergone surgery for a broken arm, leg, and hip, and the removal of some grenade shrapnel. He looked up at them with a weary, troubled expression.
I still can't believe it about Liz.
It saved her a lifetime in prison,
said Jameson. Decker kept his gaze on Kelly.
What are you going to do now?
What else? As soon as I get all healed up? Going back to being a cop.
You might have other options, said a voice.
They all turned to see Shane walk in the door. He came to stand next to the bed. Kelly looked up at him, his eyes growing watery.
I was hoping you'd come by.
Shane put a hand on Kelly's shoulder.
You've been through hell and back, Joe.
We both have, Shane.
And we'll get through it, together.
You never said why you were out at Liz's that night, said Decker.
I was out driving, saw Caroline pass by, decided to follow her. I hadn't talked to her alone for a while. I just wanted to see how she was doing. Then she got to Liz's and all hell broke loose. I grabbed my rifle. When you shouted, don't, I took the shot.
He shook his head, and his expression was one of misery. Took shots like that a lot overseas. Never thought I'd have to do it here. I knew Liz. I liked her. Jameson said,
What did you mean by other options?
I'm a rich dude, said Shane, now grinning weakly. Need somebody to help me run the business. Too much for just me.
Hell, I'm not a businessman, Shane, said Kelly.
Anybody can learn to be a businessman. Look at me.
His tone became more serious.
The thing is, Joe, I trust you. That matters more to me than you know.
Kelly shook his head.
High school was a long time ago. Haven't thrown a touchdown pass to you in over a decade.
And so maybe it's time we reconnected, said Shane. And maybe now would be a good time to do it.
So you'll keep running the businesses?
Said Jameson.
The town needs it. Hell, I need it.
What about the restaurant? Asked Kelly. What about Maddie's?
I've got some ideas about that,
said another voice. They turned to see Dawson walk into the room. Her haunted look and unsteady gait indicated that she had not fully recovered from her ordeal. She came to stand next to Shane.
You saved my life.
His voice trembled when he replied,
I couldn't let that woman shoot you.
She kissed him on the cheek and touched Kelly's hand.
How are you, Joe?
Better now, he said through his smile, though his smile didn't reach his eyes. She seemed to read his mind.
I'm the same Caroline, you know. Well, maybe not exactly the same. I feel like I've grown more in the last few days than I have in all the years before that.
Shane said, I feel the same.
Kelly nodded in agreement, then said,
You mentioned you had some ideas?
Dawson perched on the side of the bed and took one of Shane's hands and one of Kelly's in each of hers.
This is our home. My dad wanted to move to France, but I never did. We grew up here. We've seen so many changes.
She paused.
And now so many people have died. Stuart, my dad, Walt, Liz, and all the others.
Kelly said,
And something big went down over at the military base and at the drilling site, but Decker can't tell us what.
My point is,
said Dawson,
that this town really needs us right now. Shane now owns pretty much everything. But the future of London depends on the investments and the decisions made now. We're sort of at a crossroads. While the busts seem to be behind us, the world's not going to live on oil forever. We need to do it right, because doing it wrong is not an option.
Shane said, I came here in part to get Joe to help me run it. I just thought you were going to leave, Caroline, or else I would have asked you too.
Well, I'm not. I'm staying, for a lot of reasons.
She drew a long breath.
So I was thinking that we could work together to keep everything going. See, I'm betting on London, North Dakota, making the transition from just an oil town to a place where people want to live. And, well, I hope you feel the same.
Shane said, I never wanted any part of my dad's business, but now that it's mine to run, I'm thinking a lot differently. I know about fracking, but you know about everything else, Caroline. So working together seems like a great idea. He looked at Kelly. You in? Kelly squeezed Dawson's hand.
Well, considering I might not be able to pass the physical to qualify as a cop again, and that you two were always my best friends, it's a pretty easy decision.
Dawson hugged first Kelly, then Shane. All three of them had fresh tears in their eyes.
And we wish you the best of luck,
said Jameson, while Decker nodded.
Kelly said,
I hope I never need the FBI again, but if I do, I hope to hell they send you.
Shane said,
Goes double for me.
Dawson gave Jameson and Decker hugs.
Thank you for everything.
As Decker left with Jameson, he turned around to see three lifelong friends plotting how to change their little piece of the world for the better, or at least the little part of it represented by London, North Dakota. Blue Man had a government jet sent to take Decker and Jameson and Roby and Rio back to D.C. After the plane took off from the runway at the Air Force installation in London, Roby eyed Decker, who was sitting in his seat, obviously lost in thought.
You did good, Decker,
he said. Saved a lot of lives.
We all did good,
said Jameson.
And we wouldn't be here but for you two.
Decker said nothing to this. He just stared at the seat back.
And Brad Daniels recovered and is living at a VA hospital, said Roby. Here he's loving telling stories from the past.
As the plane leveled out, Roby got two beers from the bar up front, sat next to Decker, and handed him one. Real and Jameson got up from their seats and sat at a table in the back with coffees. Roby took a sip of his beer and looked out the window.
The folks Purdy was working with have been identified. Appropriate back channels have been opened to bring the hammer down on them and to make sure some people are punished. There will be consequences.
Right, said Decker absently.
No, there will be consequences. And Jess and I are going to be the tips of that spear. We volunteered.
Decker eyed him closely.
That makes me feel better, he said, quite sincerely.
Roby glanced at him.
You know, every time I finish a mission, I take a walk down by Memorial Bridge in D.C. late at night.
Why do you do that?
Asked Decker, suddenly interested.
Don't know. Why does anyone do anything?
To think, maybe?
Maybe. A little quiet time before...
Going back to work?
Yeah.
Decker drained half his beer.
Maybe that's all we have.
Meaning work?
Meaning what else?
Answered Decker.
You're good at what you do.
So are you.
And I used to think that was enough, said Roby.
Decker shot him a glance.
And now you don't?
And now, maybe I don't.
He paused and stared at his drink.
I read your file.
I didn't have the opportunity to read yours.
I've never been married, Decker. Never had kids. That would be tough for anyone. I'm sorry that happened to you.
Decker didn't respond. He shifted his gaze to look out the window where it was dark.
They're getting ready to enter the bunker, said Roby, and clean out all the crap.
Good to know.
It's not a bad thing for people to do from time to time. Clean out the crap.
This caused Decker to look at the man.
You never struck me as being a philosopher.
Is that what you call it?
I don't know. First thing that popped into my head.
I guess I can see that.
People often feel the need to give me advice, said Decker,
a bite to his words. Roby nodded slowly.
I felt the same way until I realized I had never followed any of that advice, and then suddenly I was in a place I didn't want to be.
And are you out of that place now?
Not even close. But just think where I'd be if I hadn't even considered other possibilities.
A few moments of quiet passed before Roby rose and said,
I'll leave you to it.
He headed to the front of the jet. Decker called after him.
Going to Memorial Bridge after we land?
Always.
He glanced back.
Everyone needs a place, right?
Chapter 87. Nearly 3 hours later, the jet touched down in D.C. and rolled to a stop. After deplaning, the four said their goodbyes. Jameson shook Roby's and Real's hands.
I hope this isn't the last time we see you. Be careful what you wish for,
said Real, her eyes twinkling.
We usually only show up when the world is about to end. Well, if it is, I wouldn't mind you having our backs.
Decker shook Real's hand, then turned to Roby and said,
Enjoy your Memorial Bridge time.
And you enjoy wherever you end up going for your quiet time.
As Decker and Jameson were heading to the terminal, she said,
I don't think I ever want to go back to North Dakota.
Hey, don't hold it against the state. And Kelly, Shane, and Caroline will have it in tip-top shape in no time.
She glanced at him.
But I still don't understand how you could call this case simple. Look at everything you figured out, everything you said back at Liz's place.
But the critical part that allowed me to grab the end of the chain and run with it, that was simple.
What do you mean?
Greed, Alex. one of the oldest motives in the book. It explains everything Liz did.
I think there's one more thing to add to that, Decker.
What's that? He said, looking at her in surprise.
Maybe the oldest motive in the book to hurt someone else.
Which is?
Love.
She said simply.
Liz's twisted, terrible love for Caroline. But love all the same.
Decker let out a long sigh and nodded.
I think that's the most insightful thing either one of us has said during this case, Alex.
High praise coming from you,
she said. As they entered the terminal, Decker said,
my sister invited me to visit her and the kids out in California in a couple of weeks. Stan's flying out, too.
That's great, Decker. Are you going to go?
I haven't made up my mind.
She looked at him closely.
Well, I think you should, and I mean it. After everything that just happened, a little family time might do you wonders. I know I'm going to visit my family. I need some hugs and kisses.
Decker said,
I know that, Alex. I did have a family, you know.
You still have a family, Amos.
She shot back. They took a cab to the condo they shared in Southeast D.C. When they got there, Jameson took a shower, changed into sweats, dropped into bed, and fell right asleep. Decker put his coat back on and went for a walk down near the Anacostia River. On the other side of town, he figured, Will Roby would be making his way about now to Memorial Bridge and the Potomac to do his brooding. Decker took a seat on a bench and looked out at the dark flowing waters and the lights beyond.
Now what? As Roby had implied.
He took out his phone and called his sister. Renee answered on the second ring.
My God, Amos. Stan called and told me some of what happened. It's a miracle you're all still alive.
Yeah, I guess it is.
I suppose this sort of thing happens to you a lot.
Maybe more than most. Look, about coming to see you and the kids.
Rest assured, we'll give you your own space. No suffocating you with love and affection on my watch.
She added in a lighthearted tone. When she next spoke, her voice, though, had lost its frivolity.
Will you come?
He didn't answer right away.
I'm not sure, Renee. I'll have to let you know.
Oh, okay.
Her tone of disappointment bounded over the ether and hit Decker as hard as anyone ever had on the football field.
There's just a lot going on.
I know. And Amos, regardless of whether you come or not.
Yeah?
You will always be loved, little brother.
I'm not sure I deserve that, Renee.
Well, I think you've earned it. And coming from your sister, I hope you know how big a deal that is.
She clicked off and he rose and started walking, perhaps in search of his memorial bridge,
perhaps in search of something, anything else, and terrified that he would never be able to find it. Because maybe it did not exist for someone like him.
He took out the photo of Cassie and Molly and studied it under the moonlight. Time did not heal all wounds for him. It barely touched them, in fact. It was like pouring iodine on a cancerous tumor.
I don't miss you less and less. I miss you more and more. And I'm so sorry there's absolutely nothing I can do about it.
Decker put the photo away and started to walk on, but then stopped. In his mind's eye were the images of his wife and daughter. He just stood there, frozen for a few moments. They seemed to be talking to him, somehow communicating something he already knew, but simply refused to acknowledge. And then Jameson's last words came back to him.
You still have a family.
Decker slowly reached into his pocket, took out his phone, and punched in the number.
Renee?
Amos, what's wrong?
I just wanted to tell you that I'll be there.
Thank you for listening. Walk the Wire, written by David Baldacci, read by Keith Brewer and Orla Cassidy.